So, retrospectors, what historical events are we ticking off on this week's run of Today in History?
Well, Tuesday is the anniversary of the first Tarzan movie to hit the silver screen.
Then on Wednesday, we tell the story of how Gottlieb Daimler inadvertently invented the motorbike.
On Thursday, we explain how MSG got demonized in the 1960s.
And on Friday, we revisit a legendary battle on a frozen Russian lake.
We discuss this and more on Today in History with the retrospectors. 10 minutes each weekday, wherever you get your podcasts.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Media Podcast, this week coming from the Guardian Edinburgh International Television Festival. I'm Ollie Mann and I'm in a room in the Edinburgh Conference Centre. Everyone has a glass of wine in their hands. There are a lot of people casually holding Twiglets. Coming up on the episode today, we will bring you our unique take on this important event in the TV calendar. We will be discussing David Abrams' McTaggart. We will be talking about race and youth on telly, but much more importantly, we'll be covering the gossip as well. That's all to come on the Media Podcast, sponsored by Audioboo. Well, with me in Edinburgh today is the TV editor of Heat magazine, Boyd Hilton, veteran of this festival.
I am, yes.
How is it for you, Boyd, this year compared to other years?
This is my 15th, Ollie.
Wow.
Just want to make that clear. 15 TV festivals in a row. This one is as good as they all have been, if not better.
Damning with faint praise.
Yeah.
And next to Boyd, we have the newly appointed media editor of The Guardian, Jane Martinson. Busy press office this year, Jane?
Yeah, it has been really busy.
What's the big story that you think your audience actually want to read about?
Well, obviously the McTaggart speech by David Abrams, but also the Game of Thrones session yesterday. That was a story that lots of people have read about this morning. I'm astonished by the numbers.
I think anything tags Game of Thrones.
I was going to say. Well, I think we might have put sex in the headline as well, so Game of Thrones
Very
sex.
Very good. And finally, we welcome to the Media Podcast the broadcaster June Sarpong. Hello, June. Also, the founder of the WIE Symposium. Now, what is that?
You've been doing your research. It's a women's conference. It's a women's empowerment conference. We empower women.
Can you empower women here in Edinburgh, or is it something you do on set?
I'd love to, if they'll have me.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you were here to hosting a session, weren't you?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. On youth TV.
Yes, it was called Desperately Seeking 16 to 34-year-olds. And it was really all about sort of the state of youth television, or the lack of it.
Of which more later. Okay. Yes. But before we actually talk about the kind of the meat and gristle of the conference, and everyone's talking about what's in the sessions and who said what and what David Abrams said and everything. But actually, it does seem most people are here for networking. You know, most people in the industry are here to actually prop each other up at a bar, pass their business cards around. So let's actually just talk about the reality of that for a minute. How much is that going on, do you think? Jane, I mean, how much do you identify is going on? Because there's this very friendly vibe around, but underneath there's this undercurrent of business, I feel.
I'm sort of surprised. I went to Cannes in June, which is that advertising festival, and I think there's much more of a vibe. It's huge, but there's a real vibe of people making deals in alleyways. I think here you don't get the making deals, but you do get, you know, there's the sort of dinners and people in Soho House late at night, although the music was really loud, so there wasn't a lot of, you know, it's more like shouting at each other. But that was fun. The other thing is, it's a really, you know, it's an industry where everyone likes to know each other, and so that's great. And this sort of place, you know, Edinburgh at the end of August, it's quite a nice time. It's like before the start of the new term, isn't it? You can sort of get together after the holidays and have a laugh.
I hadn't thought about it as a back to school conference, but there is a certain vibe of that as well, isn't there? People setting out their big shows for the autumn as well.
Yeah,
Boyd.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I regard it as a kind of like a celebration of TV, an annual celebration of TV. I mean, it is called the festival, so it's kind of partly a conference where, you know, you are debating topics and things like that, important topics, sometimes not. But for me, it's really just, I mean, you know, I want to hear about good TV that's coming up, and I want to talk about good TV that's past. So Jane's session with Game of Thrones yesterday, which I went to, it was interesting. I did a session with Jade Mercurio this morning, creator of Line of Duty, and that's what it's like. That's what I get excited about. Yeah. All the kind of industry stuff, I have to say, bores me. But I think it's a really good thing, because it's like the TV industry comes together and celebrates that it actually is really good.
And June, having spent some time in the States recently, I imagine there, when you have an event like this, people are much more brash about that business element. I mean, here there's this sort of self-deprecating British, let's all go and get pissed together, but we won't talk about business thing going on, isn't there?
Yeah, there's like an embarrassment about it here, whereas in America, they are upfront, they are there for business. In fact, they want to talk business before they have the social chat. And the difference there as well is they want to sort of see if it's worth talking to you. I much prefer our kind of reserved way of doing it.
Yeah, that much said, nicer. Where do you think is the best place to do a bit of networking if someone is listening to this and is thinking about coming up next year and wants to push themselves around? What have we learned?
Well, I think, I don't know, Jane, maybe you and Boyd can sort of lead on this better. I think people are more open to networking here. If you met the same executives somewhere else in London or at a party in London, and you're, I don't know, an up-and-coming producer, they're probably not going to want to talk to you, whereas here they know that's what they're here for. Yeah, so I think they're much more open to it. So actually it's a really good place to come and hit the top level program makers and decision makers, 100%.
Yeah, you may not get any programs out of it, but you can at least tap them up.
Yeah.
And late yesterday there was a group of youths who'd probably just been to your session, June, right, who gave me their card. And I looked at it, and I will probably, you know, I might check them out when I get home. And so that kind of thing happens. But I think...
Will you write about them? That's what would be successful.
If they're good. Yeah, if they're good, you know. I mean, yeah, I'll certainly, you know, it's like people do that. You know, they do go up to you and publicise themselves here.
For anyone who can't afford it or who isn't being paid for out the public purse by the BBC, if you were to stand outside the Edinburgh International Conference Centre with your business cards and your demo reel, there's a lot of executives just standing outside having a fag, aren't there?
Oh, God, totally, yeah.
And that's actually quite a good way to do it next year, folks.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I think. It's sort of hard to say there's one event that you should go to, like the opening night drinks, because often it's people you bump into on the stairs or on the corridors, you know, that there's everybody's here, and people tend to like go to the same big events and big think speeches.
Okay, good stuff. Well, let's talk about the meaty stuff now, and let's start with the MacTaggart, because that is the thing that people tend to focus on. This year it was Channel 4 chief executive David Abram. Which has been reported, actually, Jane, as kind of Channel 4 boss slags off Kevin Spacey in the Mail Online. But actually, there was a bit more to it than that, wasn't there? Give us a gist of what David had to say from the industry point of view.
I think what was strong about it was that he's come out and said, let's defend public service broadcasting. And, you know, he does... Obviously, he could be accused of being very Little Englander about it. I think there's a line in his speech where he says, I'm not putting the Union Jack over creativity. Which he was slightly, but he is, you know, in a year where we've had a sort of, as he said, a string of Americans, we've had a few big purchases, obviously Viacom and Channel 5, he's sort of saying, look, we've got something very special in the UK, which is public service broadcasting. Now, if I were to quibble, I would say that message this year ahead of an election should have come from Tony Hall of the BBC. Now, politically, obviously that's slightly awkward and difficult for Tony Hall, but still, you know, David Abrams has stepped up to the plate. He's doing his bit. You know, obviously, there's a bit of it in any MacTaggart, which is then about Channel 4 and trying to protect future-proof Channel 4. But I think putting that out there and saying, we're 9 months away from an election, public service broadcasting, the licence fee, we don't have a chair for the BBC Trust, which he didn't say, but it's all part of the background picture, that's a really important thing to be thinking about.
Except, I mean, one take on it is that he is coated in the Union Jack and he's celebrating British television, but I suppose another way to look at it is actually he's the majority of the audience who are listening, who are now owned by these indies that he's effectively saying have got a bit big for themselves, and why are they earning so much money? You're sort of alienating quite a lot of the audience.
Yeah, talking to a few people afterwards, I don't think it was the most sort of popular MacTaggart I've heard from lots of people, like you say, who are either indies or they've been bought by big companies. I mean, David himself said, you know, he spent half his working life working for an American company. Mm. So, you know, and I think he had a couple of little digs at sort of London Live and Richard Desmond, which, you know, people think there are bigger targets out there that are sort of... not Kevin Spacey, obviously, but that he could have talked about more. But
And he also talked about the impact on viewers as well, didn't he, Boyd? Because this can sound all very media industry, but he was also saying You know, if all these big companies, these American companies, take over these indies, and if companies like Channel 5 seem to exist to rip off Channel 4, then the viewers notice that over a period of time.
Yeah, although I completely disagree with him about that, because it was a confused message. Because on the one hand, he's saying we must all beware of Americans taking over British TV companies. So, for example, you know, Viacom's taken over Channel 5 from Richard Desmond. I'm sorry, but when the news was announced that Richard Desmond was going to sell it to a good media company rather than his own insanely run business where the whole time plugging OK and New Magazine, rivals to Heat, obviously, I was delighted. I think everyone punched the air. Thank God it's been taken over by Viacom and it's run by Richard Desmond. So the idea that Americans are bad and that British are good is nonsense. I mean, that's absolutely bizarre. And then he went on to slag off Richard Desmond. He says, well, what's your point? Would you rather it was owned by Viacom or Richard Desmond? Simple question. To me, it's a no-brainer. So there's that. And B, the idea that the Americans, like, if they did end up saying, you know, to be specific about it, his thing about, you know, the Americans could end up buying ITV. Well, A, I don't think they will. B, if they did... Really? Well, why are they buying it? Because ITV is now very successful, and the reason it's successful is because its programming is really, really good, better than ever. So why would they change that? You know, I think the idea that... It felt like he's anticipating a problem that doesn't really exist. And even then, his idea of what would happen if it did is kind of misguided anyway, so I've disagreed with the whole thing.
And in the post-McTaggart... I don't know what you could call it, really, where they pour over the corpse with Steve Hewlett the morning after. Steve Hewlett was kind of pushing him on the point of how much money Channel 4 is actually making, and he was pushing back, saying, well, you need to look at all of the network of channels.
That didn't make sense. So on the one hand, he was saying Channel 4 is brilliant, it's doing really brilliantly, we've done great, we've ridden through, you know, the economy and everything, and we're making the best of it. And the other ones, he was saying, but we need something else to safeguard us about something. I wasn't quite, do you really? Because you're doing a brilliant job, you've just been telling us. So again, that felt, I didn't understand that point either.
And do obviously, you were very frequently on Channel 4 in the noughties. How do you think it's changed from then to now and the company that he's trying to defend and promote?
Well, you know, the thing that we were talking about, I moderated a session on, you know, the future of youth television, and I think what's very sad is that Channel 4, well, none of the broadcasters are doing this, but Channel 4 really should be the place that does it in terms of nurturing new talent. There's not enough of that going on. And also, I would say that, you know, if we look at, you know, 5 years ago, sort of our time when we were all coming through that system, there were really sort of definable faces of the channel, and I don't think you have that anymore. It was really clear. If you said Channel 4, you knew who the channel, whether it was from a Chris Evans right down through to, you know, Denise and Johnny right down through to us, you knew who those Channel 4 faces were, and that isn't the case anymore. I wouldn't know who to say, oh, that's a iconically Channel 4 face anymore.
And
a lot of people
the
they have were there from before. If it's a Jamie Oliver or whoever.
Well, they're kind of, you're right, but they're kind
they've
of now
inherited
like those
them.
People who front those lifestyle shows. So there's the Curse of Your Socks and the...
But that was from before, though. All inherited
well, basically,
talent.
Basically, they shouldn't have gone to T4, should they?
We all agree on that. but actually, in terms of genre mix, maybe,
but even
that
they'd
say that their faces now are made in Chelsea and White D from Benefit Street, you know, so
yeah,
they make a different kind
not,
of show.
That I wouldn't say, because I think it's a different skill set. I think the skill set of a reality star, whatever, and I love reality TV, so I'm not one of these TV people that poo-poos reality TV. I love reality TV. I think it's a different skill set to actual television hosting or whatever, you know, where you're nurturing and creating talent within a sort of proper produced non-scripted format.
I was quickly going to say, because you asked about, I forgot to actually answer your question about the viewers, the effect on viewers of what David Amram was saying. And that's my thing, is I didn't get an idea of what the effect would be on viewers. And I do feel sometimes about, particularly with McTaggart, it's not really about TV and viewers and creativity. It's kind of about, I mean, Kevin Spacey addressed it a bit last year in a rather boastful way. But I didn't feel with this year's McTaggart that it was about making TV and being creative. It felt a very industry topic this year.
I think the whole festival to me, so this is my first year back in 4 years, so sadly I missed Kevin Spacey last year, but I do think this festival seems very industry focused. Yeah. It's very about, you know, controllers and, you know, how to make TV programmes. And I think that, I mean, it's always been like that. You have sort of, it's a bit, you know, the swing of the pendulum. So last year, lots about creativity, you know, great actor, talking about talent. This year, really about the industry. And I think the McTaggart was a big thing of that, which is all, you know, terms of trade, those sorts of topics, which it's not about the viewer that, you know, no, absolutely, most viewers are going, what, you know,
right. And me, let us talk about, right? Yeah.
Indeed. Well, it does get very policy heavy, let's say, and regulation heavy. So if you're interested in that kind of level of detail, do download Friends of the Podcast, the Broadcast Talking TV podcast, where you can hear packed head John McVeigh getting very animated on indie trade deals. Rather him than me.
I'm Maggie Brown. I'm a veteran media, a writer and journalist, and this is my 28th Edinburgh. I would say that there's quite a lot of unhappiness about David Abraham's MacTaggart. There's quite a lot of bitchiness going on behind the scenes, saying it's all very parochial. I actually think it needed to be said, because there is this massive change going on. It's quite clear people think ITV is going to be taken over next, that maybe 20% of its shares have already been bought up by speculators anticipating a big takeover. I think also people are interested that Tony Hall, the director general of the BBC, hasn't popped up this year like he did last year. He suddenly made a sort of flying visit to say there would be no more demonisation of people who got things wrong. And of course we've just seen a rather interesting example at the BBC over the Digital Media Initiative, where they most certainly seem to have done that under his watch. So, no, lots going on. Lots of people just happy to be in television. The thing that's really struck me about it, and it links up with David Abraham's MacTaggart lecture, is that there's clearly a big change underway. Whether you want to call it globalization or Americanization, that's up to you. One of the most interesting sessions I've been to was actually about European Union money going into co-productions of a European nature involving at least three broadcasters in Europe and probably different languages as well.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
In an attempt to really big up drama, to make sure that the budgets can match those of HBO and other cable channels, that they can actually kind of match the Americans. And I hadn't realised how much money was available as grants to do this. 1 million euros, for example, as a basic sort of subsidy for really big productions of 12 million euros. So there is a sense now, I think, that everything is moving really fast. And the people here, it's not just entertainment formats, it's looking for every single way, really, to exploit good ideas and good content and to look for hits. Real hunger about.
Okay, let's look around a bit more of the festival now. June, Jane and Boyd are still with me. What have been the main themes this year, do we think? Well, let's start with youth, actually, because we touched on it a couple of times. But June, you know, particularly with the, I nearly said closure of BBC Three. Of course, the BBC would call it the online migration. But anyway,
migration.
The death of BBC Three. you know, there's a lot of focus on where are young people going to go to watch telly now?
Yeah, well, what was interesting about our session is
you would think that the young people, and oh God, that's so weird saying young people now, would say...
What, are we talking 1634?
Yeah.
I'm still in it.
Lucky
by 1 year.
You're young.
I'm still officially young by 1 year.
Yeah, officially young. Enjoy, it only lasts a year, unless you're 16.
All I watch is E4.
Really good.
Yeah, yeah.
What a lot of them were saying in the audience is that actually, for them, TV is still the holy grail. TV is still what they aspire to do. So even if they are online at the moment, the idea is to be online so that you can eventually be on television. And I think the broadcasters really shouldn't miss a trick, because if there's a generation that grows up not used to watching television, then that will no longer be the case, and then TV will become obsolete. But at the moment, they are looking to TV to be the sort of the ultimate destination point. And I think that means that really all the broadcasters need to do is just make programming that they want.
And Jane, Stuart Murphy told Richard Bacon on 5 Live on Thursday morning that moving BBC Three online was a massive strategic mistake. And David Abram actually said he was delighted. I mean, he was joking, but it was tongue-in-cheek, but, you know, he was kind of being serious as well. Delighted at the move because it might be good for E4. Do you think the general feeling is the BBC's made a mistake?
And I think, I mean, lots of the executives here obviously think it is. I mean, Stuart then went and obviously appointed Zai Bennett to head up Sky Atlantic from BBC Three. And on a panel yesterday, when talking about Game of Thrones and all the sorts of scandal and the infighting, he made this brilliant line about how, you know, at least in Game of Thrones with American drama again... which is not exactly low quality, all the infighting and backstabbing and bloodshed was on the screen, whereas at the BBC it's all behind the screen. So I think there's a huge amount of bitterness. And yeah, I do, I mean, you know, it was an odd decision, I think. I mean, okay, the budget was 90 million, it's going to go down to 30 million. Half, apparently, of the viewers are online only. But, you know, it was the only channel that really was dedicated to younger people, and that's what they're supposed to be servicing.
And June, in your session, what was kind of the outcome, as much as there was one, in terms of what is the prescription for how to remedy the situation and get more young people watching telly?
Yeah, I think it was a couple of things. Well, you know, back to the BBC Three thing, Zai Bennett was very vocal in our session and, you know, basically said it was a disaster and obviously part of the reason he left. But I think in terms of what they should be doing, what really came out of our session was it's not an either or, you need both. And I think what the BBC's move is an either or decision, and actually what the audience is saying is yes, they still want television, yes, they want online. In the same way, when they watch a television program, they are tweeting about it, they're not choosing Twitter over television. So the idea is, why can't you have both? And I think that's actually a great point.
If anyone can find someone from the BBC who can explain why they need to take it off air, because that doesn't save any money. So they made the cuts, right, to programming, yeah. Massive budget cut, fine. Yeah. But why they need to take it off air and stick it online, no one. I've asked everyone, from Danny Cohen downwards to BBC press officers. They and it gets to the point where it's embarrassing, because they literally don't.
Some
they've
money,
made this decision.
It?
But doesn't
anything,
it cost more to
anything.
Transmit on
yeah,
television?
It may even but hardly at all, though.
Really?
Yeah, hardly at all. But it's all about the programme budget was slashed massively, but the actual transmitting the channel
is no different.
Is hardly so any. They're not saving
so
any money.
So is the conspiracy here, Boyd, that this yeah. is a sacrificial lamb ahead
Absolutely.
Of charter renewal?
It was
it's saying, look what will happen,
yeah.
politicians, if you
it's
cut more money.
It's basically Danny Cohen, the BBC bigwigs, kind of going, look, we can cut stuff. This is what happens if you don't, you know.
Give us the money.
It's a political act, and it's insane, because...
Next time, Tories, we're coming for BBC Four.
Yeah. I mean, really, actually, if they'd have cut BBC Four, they probably would have been in less trouble. I mean, I don't think they should cut any channel that exists at the moment, but...
There would have been less uproar.
There would have been less uproar, yeah. because that's not a channel... That, you know, the youth, without wanting to be clichéd and yeah. patronising and romantic about it, if you're not getting young people watching TV and watching... You know, what the hell...
There's
what
no
are you
future-proofing
well,
going
yeah.
on, yeah.
So, one thing I would say about BBC Three, your session was very interesting, but I think there should have been a focus on BBC Three. Because to me, that's the biggest issue. One of, you know, maybe
yeah.
apart from black people, you yes. know, black people and ethnic minorities,
yes,
that issue.
Yes.
Well, Boyd, you've seamlessly moved us on to our next
yeah.
topic,
yeah.
Boyd.
But apart from that, for me, BBC Three really should have been a big focus.
You have seamlessly moved us on to our next topic, Boyd, because, Good. In fact, we are going to talk about race now as well,
yeah.
because there was some research out during the festival, friend of the podcast, Liz Howell, revealing in a week-long study of mainstream channels that the least diverse genre of television on screen was topical, factual and entertainment. So shows like Come Dine With Me, Cash in the Attic. Boyd, surely those are the kind of shows that actually be quite easy to find a diverse cast for. You just need yeah. to make a point of looking for them.
That's bizarre, isn't it? Yeah, absolutely bizarre. I just think the whole issue... I mean, a friend of mine, Danny Lee Winter, who's an actor, who started the whole Act for Change campaign, which is... So the two things happened really with this issue is Lenny Henry, BAFTA, made a big speech about it, which was amazing. And then my friend Daniel Lewins, who's an actor, was watching an ITV drama launch kind of, you know, VT on TV, and there was no ethnomonsters in the whole thing, their entire drama slate. And he launched this campaign with his acting friends, and they put that, the letter in The Guardian recently was kind of connected to him. So anyway, I mean, it is extraordinary, and it's gone backwards. So there are fewer people on TV than there were 5 years ago from an ethnic minority background, black and ethnic. So all of that, and I think, for me, the one thing that came out of it is that Stuart Murphy of Sky made an absolute commitment to changing it and putting rules in place at Sky to make sure they would, and that's the only way around it. And I can't see why the other broadcasters don't follow suit. I don't see what they're...
Danny Cohen's answer to it basically is, I don't like quotas. You know, I support the idea of having more ethnic minority faces on screen, but I don't like quotas. But then you think, well, you've had 30 years saying that and it hasn't really worked.
I mean, Sky said that they're now committed to 20%, haven't they?
Yeah, which is above actually the proportion of the population.
Yeah, and they've done a quota for having women on screen. Now, whether they get to do that or not is another matter. I mean, one thing I have noticed, you know, almost 4 years as women's editor... talking about issues of diversity, you come back to Edinburgh, frankly, you look on those panels, and I'm not saying, I mean, this is an incredibly gender diverse, you know, there are men and women
definitely
in the TV entry and in here, and you look at those panels,
yes,
and you're lucky if you get one woman. This morning, there were two women in a session, and it was shocking. There were four men, of course, so the balance is always, you know, about 1 to 5. Mm. But the number of ethnic minority faces, the number of non-white faces is unbelievably
probably 1%,
low.
1%, probably.
Is it? What is it, do you think?
Here, today? Yeah. Oh, probably 1%, 2%. Mm. Yeah.
And June, again, compared to America, you know, what's the difference? Because a lot of black actors say they go to the States to get cast in dramas in a kind of colourblind way, and then they're playing American even though they're British, and they can't get cast here. What's the difference between the way the US looks and the way we look at casting?
Well, I think the difference is that I think they look at it as a business. So for them, it's the bottom line. It's not from this PC, you know, do-gooder lens. And I think that's actually the issue here, is that it's still very much seen as the other. And I think any time anything is looked at through the lens of the other, you are always going to have problems because you're not viewing it with the same level of criteria. So therefore, if somebody comes in with a program idea, you can't get past race, you can't get past gender to see whether or not this is good. You're not looking at it from just a clear lens of, is this something that there's an audience for? Whereas in America, it's a business decision. They know that there is X amount of people of color watching television. Therefore, if you don't reflect them on the screen, they're not watching your show. You are not making money. And I think the difference here is it's not looked at in that same way. It's seen as a pity thing. It's, we should... No, it's business. It's bottom line. Channel 4, at any of the broadcasters that rely on advertising, 14% of the population is a big number to ignore. It's nuts.
But that said, you know, as a person of colour, have you felt that actually sometimes someone box-ticking works in your favour because they are saying, well, we're looking for a black presenter?
That's a good point.
No one ever says to a man, do you find that being a man is really good for your career?
Yeah, but it is.
Oh, my God.
Being a white man is really good for your career.
June is sort of maybe one of a kind, but she's there because she's probably had to work really hard. You know? No one ever asked that question. You must, you know... I mean, there's all sorts of decisions that are made when you appoint someone, aren't there? But, you know, that sort of... Most people... appoint in their own image, certainly.
They do.
Sorry, go on.
No, but you're right. Most people do appoint in their own image, but that's fine if the audience is only your image. But if there's a big, sizable chunk, and the chunk of an audience that is growing, you know, when we get to 2015, 2020, it's going to be almost double that number. So it's nuts to ignore it.
I just want to say one little thing, which is slightly mean about the McTaggart speech yesterday. Were you in the room watching it? So if you were in the room, and David, you know, to his credit, he said Channel 4 needs to do more for diversity, and they've done this fund, and they had, and behind him on the screen, there are all these pictures. I mean, so, I mean, on one hand, really good, you know, really focusing on it, the regions and BMAE, and then he had these pictures, and every single picture, there was one woman, and they were all white, middle-aged men, every single picture. I mean, I don't know why they allowed those pictures to go. Should have just left the pictures out, because the message was good, the visual
was bad.
The visual was bad.
But June's point is so good, because what I was talking to, again, to my friend Danny about, is that in if you think about, you know, I think that one of the problems is that executives at that level of people who are deciding who's on TV and who isn't, they kind of overthink everything. They're like, oh, if I do this, if I put this person on TV, then someone's going to go, I'm like, in America, that's just not even a consideration, is it? And it's like, and it's almost like they're anticipating something that just doesn't exist. And if you think about it, the biggest music stars in the world are black. The biggest sports stars in the world are black. But the British TV stars aren't. And it's like, why? So what do they think? You know, the whole world, you know, is kind of obsessed, basically, with
black
those
culture.
With black culture,
yeah.
Except the BBC and Channel 4 and ITV. So, you know.
Coming up next, it's the media quiz.
Hello, producer Matt here to say that we couldn't bring you coverage of this festival without the kind support of our Kickstarter pledgers, Audioboo, and the good people at Squarespace. Squarespace is the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website, portfolio, and online store. And Media Podcast listeners get a free trial and 10% off by entering the code MEDIAPOD at the checkout. Squarespace is easy to use. Just drag and drop media into the browser window, choose a template that suits your project, and that's it. You're ready to launch in minutes. Start a trial with no credit card required and begin building a website with Squarespace today. And get 10% off when you use the offer code MEDIAPOD.
Okay, it is the Media Quiz Edinburgh Special. This time it's called Greenlight. I'm going to read you a list of show titles announced at this year's festival. Slightly unfair advantage to Boyd, I appreciate. You're going to tell me which channel commissioned it. Buzz in if you know the answer. So I'm going to give you the title. You're going to buzz in with the channel that commissioned it. Title number one. Boy Meets Girl, Britain's first transgender sitcom.
Me? Is that, what are we supposed to do, to buzz in?
Buzz in, what did you say, Boyd?
Boyd, oh hi, me, Boyd. BBC Three.
Correct. Right, title number two. Wild Things, the game show where adults get dressed up in furry animal outfits and negotiate a woodland obstacle course.
Oh yeah, I do know this as well, sorry, Boyd. Yeah, it's Sky One.
But you're right, that is Sky One, and we will all watch one episode of that, I think it's fair to say. They don't need to be bothered with the third and fourth, do they? Coalition, exploring the political wrangling after the 2010 result.
That's, I mean, I know. I'm going to let you guess. Yes, there you go.
Well, yeah, we'll call that a tiebreak. Yes, it is Channel 4. Is that the same
that
one as.
Good.
Yeah, that sounds quite
good idea.
Big story on it this morning.
Yes, well, I saw it being reported in the press as a kind of drama about Nick Clegg, but this sounds like actually it's going to be about both sides if it's called Coalition. Are they two separate projects?
I think the focus is on Nick Clegg, though, from what I've read. Yeah.
Good. Now, this, even if you don't know, you should be able to guess the channel from the description. Cordon, where a Belgian village is quarantined after being infected by a contagious and deadly virus. A Belgian village. Doesn't sound very ITV. Come on, let's go for this.
Sky?
No.
BBC Four.
Yes, correct. Jane has it with BBC Four. Boyd was slightly, you know, patronisingly nodding.
Sorry, I know.
Again, this is about the representation of women in the industry, isn't it, really? I mean, you're being patronised, essentially. Boyd is going to get fatter because he wins the cream egg, so you can take some
thanks,
of this from
I really
the fact
need
that you don't get
the
calories.
I really need that.
That is it for this episode. My very big thanks to Boyd and to Jane Martinson and to June Sopong. We will be back in a couple of weeks. Remember, you can get the podcast as soon as it's ready by subscribing via our website, themediapodcast.com. This week's episode is dedicated to Wendy Schaffer. Wendy is a technical and radio enthusiast in Silicon Valley, and to Andy Smith, long-time listener, first-time pledger, who works for Beamly, the social network for television in Sydney, Australia. Thanks, Andy. Good day. I've been Ollie Mann. The producer is Matt Hill. The Media Podcast is a PPM production and not affiliated to The Guardian in any way. Until next time, bye-bye.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.